listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Episode 248 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we're catching up for a few bits. There was some intriguing news, and then there was claims that are still kind of causing too much debate at the moment in video gaming about whether or not video games are political or can be political. All spurred off from an interview that Ubisoft published on their website the other month with Tommy Francois, Vice President of Editorial at Ubisoft. Kind of been like in this interview where he pretty much doesn't say anything directly but tries to walk some kind of center line. Where it's games aren't political.
I think when it comes to production of video games, and same with production of movies, there are many people whose dollars are on the line going, oh, well, we don't want to alienate this group, and we also don't want to alienate that group. So we're just going to say that, you know, oh, it's all in, you know, good fun and whatnot, and just pretend that it's, you know, that's all it is. And it's like, you know, these political bits here, these look deliberate.
But also, it's not just that, but it's just kind of ignoring the whole concept of death of the author that Roland Barthes put forward, which is like, you know what, it doesn't really matter what the creator's intention is. The context of its release means that shit can and inevitably will be read into it. So you might get, unless of course, you know, something's really blatant about stuff, you might get people later on reading stuff out of it that the creator didn't intend. Though at the same time, how the hell Ubisoft releasing the next Watchdog set in a post-Brexit Britain that looks the way it does isn't a political statement. I don't know what fucking is, considering that Brexit is the result of political progress that's gone fucking mad.
But I mean,
out of my language.
Can I just say that? There have been multiple instances where, say for example, the Twin Towers after 9/11, you know, those have been removed from imagery, or, you know, stuff has been cut and whatnot, specifically because it was kind of political from the, you know, obviously the
terrorist point of view.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you said about the death of the author, you know, birth of the reader, blah, blah. You know, those kind of things were added before that event happened. And that actually affected stuff. So that they deliberately chose not to include what they were originally going to include.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, I mean, okay, so having completed Far Cry 5, as we all know, in the last couple of months, it was a bit freaking weird that there was, like, a lack of any form of white supremacist nationalism going on in Far Cry 5, or rather it was kind of veiled, because there were moments where it was just like, you're just gonna say, like, it's good to be like a true white red-blooded American or something, some characters and stuff, and they never quite went there. And then, like, the bad guys you're up against are all very white and all very twisted forms of Christianity. So it's like, even if you're not going for the outright, I'm not saying that Montana in particular has an issue with domestic terrorism. I mean, like, in terms of states, rural states where you might want to do that sort of thing, I suppose technically because it is a rural state, that's the kind of place you want to try for. But I'm
being
endorsing
so
terrorism.
Big.
Like, terrorism's a terrible freaking thing to be doing, for Pete's sake, people. But
don't do it. That's our official line.
I mean, if we consider things like, obviously, the So the Omaha Bombers, Bomber, whatever, in the 90s, I mean, they were from a rural area. So, like, that kind of, like, I mean, Christ, yeah, there you go. Like, you've got the, not Omaha. Is it Oklahoma bombings? The ones where they bombed the feds in the early 90s, killed loads of people.
Yeah, I think that was Omaha.
Oklahoma.
Is it Oklahoma?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Yeah, sorry, gang. Place names wrong. Sorry, guys. Oklahoma bombings. I mean, to be fair, I was very young when that happened, and it,
just rubbish.
And it's basically like what I remember of news reporting of it is actually instead like the subsequent trial in later years. But yeah, like that was some, you know, domestic terrorist nut job from the middle of a rural area doing terrible things. There's
against that. That dastardly federal government thing.
I mean, obviously, okay, not, I know Oklahoma's not in Montana, thank you, but, you know, rural setting, somebody doing terrible things. Like, there's that historical context there, which for Far Cry 5, and considering actually just what's been happening even currently in US politics and stuff, I mean, what happened recently with, was it those senators from Oregon who went on the run? So that they wouldn't be able to be pressed into dealing with any climate change legislation that the Democrats were trying to pass in the state. And
it
they
sounds like a comedy film.
And they called in local militia, who were obviously from a certain political leaning, and ran off to Idaho. It's like, what?
It's at times like that I do have to take issue with the writing in this simulation that we're all living in.
Yeah.
In the last few years, it's just absolutely fucking ludicrous. It's who makes this up? It's like, come on, you're getting really lazy. I mean, you know, you absolutely surpassed yourself in 2016, and ever since then, it's just been making it up on the fly.
But also, like, it's just kind of ignoring the fact even creators, when they don't consciously do something, they might subconsciously do something. So you'll get certain themes or certain tropes or fictional locations, or not so fictional locations, that look and feel a certain way, have certain things going on, and actually, if you trace it back to when they were making stuff, and it's like, yeah, well, all this stuff was going on. Like, I've noticed when I've gone back and read stuff that I've written, where I can see bits where I've been influenced by past and present events at the time of writing, and I wasn't consciously funneling it at the time, but oh look, it's there as a weird little reference, which if somebody else reading it might be going like, oh, that's an interesting bit of intertextuality or something.
But I mean, everything is politics, so to say, you know, otherwise is kind of a bit ridiculous, really. I mean, if you have a game where you can play as a female character, that is gender politics.
Or even in a lot of cases, as a male character and not a female character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having capital in games is politics and how it works.
Mass Effect is space politics.
Yeah, but I don't think BioWare would deny that there's politics going on, right? Right? Right?
I mean, I have seen people in the past say that, you know, these are two of my, you know, favourite things. And it's just, you know, repeatedly bang my head against a brick wall for the next half an hour. Just, you know, just imagine that as I describe this. That science fiction is not in any way political. That stuff like Star Trek or Star Wars is not political. Which is like, what? What? I mean, you watch Star Wars, it's space Nazis.
Yeah.
It's not thinly veiled at all. They're wearing sort of Nazi-style uniforms, and that's the look that Lucas was going for.
I mean it's the equivalent of basically
It's not ambiguous.
It's the equivalent of kind of looking at a painting, and instead of going, oh, there's a face there, and a nose there, and an eyes there, they go, oh, that's a bit of blue there, that's a bit of yellow there, that's a bit of red. Ooh, isn't that interesting?
Oh, God, I have seen people say that, you know, they're sick of art getting political, and everything should, you know, go back to portraits. you know, like in centuries past, and go, I've got some shocking news for you about who was commissioning those portraits.
Mm.
And
because Jesus Christ.
And the aesthetic
Jesus choices, Christ was commissioning
the, and
them.
And the aesthetic choices being made. Oh, another thing, like, thinking back to Ubisoft's game, because Ubisoft are the ones that kick me out of this. Like, I've played stuff like, was it Blacklist in the past?
Oh, yeah, was it Ghost Recon? Was it Blacklist?
It was definitely Blacklist, because you had the...
Is that Splinter?
Yeah, Splinter
Blacklist. Yeah. And it's like, weird-ass covert American military ops going into, you know, freaking... non-American territories. I mean, like, CIA Black Ops is like a thing that's been bandied about in media for decades, and when we consider what's happened in places like South America and the Middle East, I mean, like, you know? Yeah.
I mean, fuck, even, like, Super Mario Bros. Has politics in it. And I'm talking about, like, the basic politics of power dynamics.
And the monarchy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
I've got some bad news for Princess Peach about my, you know, political beliefs. Sorry.
Pikmin? An alien literally, you know, kind of come into another planet.
Exploitation of you know, native aliens.
Exactly. Yeah. Slave labour.
Yeah. I mean, considering that Ubisoft done stuff like the Assassin's Creed games, and it's like, but there's no politics, and it's like, but dudes, like,
everyone
your games
knows there's no there's no politics before the 1960s.
But I mean, it's like, I mean, God, they had like the, which game was it that was during the French Revolution, where people were losing their bloody
liberation
heads?
Liberation or something.
Unity. Ah, yeah, I got that wrong when I was talking about the Assassin's Creed games. I looked it up, and it's like derp.
Unity.
It's
so, like,
Unity. It's like Assassin's Creed Unity.
French Revolution, one of the biggest political events in European, let alone French history, where a whole bunch of hundreds of people lost their bloody heads. Like,
I'll have you know, Emily, that it was a completely apolitical revolution.
But,
you know, like they all are.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, then we've had, as you've been saying, like people going, "Oh, there's still no politics in games," like trying to decry it and stuff, and it's just like they're not like, I'm trying to think of an apolitical game.
Tetris.
But then at the same time, that the environment and the manner in which that was released is unusual as, like, evidence of how the Soviet Union was working at the time.
Pong?
Or was that about the mastery of technology?
I know, I think you're stretching a bit there. But
Bubble.
Although that is rescuing your girlfriends who have been kidnapped and you've been turned into little dinosaurs.
Gosh.
Apart from the dinosaurs there, that sounded almost exactly like Double Dragon as well. Bubble and Double Dragon.
You see, that's what you didn't know. Bubble Bobble and Double Dragon are actually the same game.
One's a sequel.
Yeah.
So I think basically if a game isn't explicitly making a political statement, the context in which it's being read means that meaning will inevitably be given to it. Like, you just can't say, even if it wasn't your intention, that the game isn't political, because it's still gonna be political in some way in its interpretation, its obvious actual presentation, or the environment in which it was created that enabled it to exist in the first place.
I mean, heck, you could argue that anything with a point, you know, like a reason for the game kind of being created, you know, would strive to be a political statement.
Is this where we can point out that sci-fi and fantasy have long, long acted as ways to tell political stories?
Mm.
Yes.
Just, you know, what if instead of evil capitalist, it was a dragon that was hoarding all the gold?
But also, let us consider for a moment the fact that, Like,
and if the evil dragon that was holding all the gold also owned a newspaper and TV channel.
There are even people that were writing popular fiction that's not even genre fiction were making political statements most of the time. I mean, Christ, most of the work of Bloody Charles Dickens is making a political statement. Shakespeare's definitely making political statements left, right, and bloody centre. Mm. It's weird, like, pretty much all prose fiction, a lot of poetry, most poetry, in fact, plays, and then obviously, like, films, and, like, fictional TV series, they tend to have a politics of some sort going on.
Somewhere. But Emily, I can think of a few films which aren't political, according to an internet commentator. For example, RoboCop isn't political in any way, is it?
Oh, my Lord.
And neither is Starship Troopers.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, poor Verhoeven would have a lot to say about that.
You know, like old-style 3D glasses where, you know, they're designed so that they only let in certain colours of light? It sounds a bit like that, only, you know, those glasses only let in a certain type of politics and they can't see anything else.
Is the thing political?
The thing? Well, it's a research facility.
You could say it's about individuality.
This is true. And as Paul said, it's in a research facility in Antarctica, which has been a heavily disputed site since it was successfully traversed in the last century. That alien's definitely got an agenda. The only reason I was thinking that is because I thought about They Lived, which was John Carpenter, and then I
went to
the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. The thing's John Carpenter, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Well, the thing from Another World, which is the John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
Because has anyone here, apart from me, seen the original, the 1950s version?
Not seen the 1950s. No. Well, the effects. It was
kind of cool. It was a slightly different idea. The whole idea that it was a bit more inversion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay.
And it was a like an alien plant that fed on blood, but it could kind of grow clones, which would be under its control, and then of course you know it would spread that way. So it was. It's a very 50s film. I mean, it's good. It's trying to be serious, you know, at least, you know, as serious as the 1950s sci-fi is going to get about a vampire plant in the Antarctic.
Well,
but, yeah, but it's not like, you know, as serious as something like...
I mean, is this like a...
The Earth Stood Still, but yeah, it's yeah.
But yeah, it's like, and also like comics can be particularly political as well. Like, I think any form of media can be political and often is, again, based on the context of either itself or its consumers.
Well, in essence, politics is quite an amazingly broad term because it encompasses basically pretty much any context that you come up with, whether it be economical, whether it be social,
religious,
you know, anything at all that influences power dynamics between individuals, politics.
Yeah.
It's something that you cannot get away from, and it's part of the reason why when people turn around and say, I don't do politics, it's like, you do, you just don't like listening to other people's politics.
And also, every single person I know, you know, both in real life and, you know, through the internet, or, you know, however you want to term them, every single person I've met who said, I'm not political, has been identifiably centre-right.
Mm.
It's just, you may think you're not political, but it's still, I can't quite grasp how, you know, I don't do politics, and then they come out with, you know, something that's, you know, complete bollocks, and you just have to think, well, that's something that would come out the Daily Mail, or...
Yeah, I mean, surely it's quite privileged.
Best case, and, you know, the Telegraph, but, you know, it's still, if you're not political, why do you think that's political?
Mm. I mean, in a way, it's like thinking that is kind of a privilege in of itself because you've never had to learn the ways in which you've been you know, kind of disenfranchised or
discriminated against.
In society.
This brings to mind a specific example that I noticed. And she got dragged for this, justifiably. Sarah Vine, who's the, you know, the wife of Michael Gove, you know, who's been in and out of, the government, you know, backbencher and then back into government again. He was one of the people who was setting up, you know, the whole Brexit campaign and, you know, all of that. Sarah Vine watched a program about how it was difficult for people who had various disabilities to get support on, you know, on the welfare state or, you know, the, you know, social support. And she was, surely this can't be how it is. And it's just, wait until your husband gets home. It's just, this is what people who have been on the front line, who have had, I've had to deal with this shit. I've had plenty of friends who have had to deal with this shit, where the government decides, no, you're fine for work. You know, for people who, you know, in one way or another, clearly are not. Mm. And they have support taken away and they're forced into work and it goes horribly wrong, or they're left absolutely destitute because that rug has been, you know, snatched away. And I think, you know, the people who haven't had to face this, you know, they always have a, oh, I'm in such poverty, I only have 30 grand in the bank. You know, that kind of, you know, poverty. Mm. I'm going to have to ask mama for, you know, a loan. You know, the people who can't do that are the ones who have been complaining about, you know, government policies. Mm. But of course, if you never have to deal with that, if you never have to deal with living on the breadline, if you never have to deal with not being able to work, if you never have to deal with either, you know, being discriminated against because of your race, your gender, your sexuality, any of those things, if you've never had to deal with those, you are in a lucky spot, whether you are poor or not. So if someone comes along with an experience that you haven't shared and they say, this is bad because these things, there are far too many people who, oh, don't stop, you know, don't bring politics into it. Oh, why are you making this political? Everything is political in life. And that includes stories.
Yeah.
You would have to work really hard to write a story that wasn't in any way politically charged. Because if you write something about a princess, you are supporting a monarchy. And you are supporting some kind of, you know, hereditary, you know, power system. And infamously, George Lucas tried to get out of that with The Phantom Menace.
Yes.
With, you know, Queen Amidala elected. What? What? It's just, that's not a queen then. But you desperately wanted to have a, you know, a princess and the queen, you know, etc. You wanted those tropes from, you know, the old sort of, you know, fantasy, you know, cinema serials that, you know, he was a fan of. He wanted those things in there, and he's tried to wrangle them into, you know, a more acceptable straitjacket, and completely failed. So, yeah. Hopefully, that was all on topic.
Kind of.
Well, it was all
pretty
politics.
Much. I mean, politics, but no,
It's mind-numbing to me that, you know, there are people who think that all these stories are not political, you know, political. And yes, they are, you know, politics. It's just, all you have to do is actually sit down and think about something for more than 5 seconds past the, these people are good, those people are bad. But, good people shoot the bad people, it's good.
But also thinking beyond your own experiences.
Yeah, and people need to do that more. And it's a recurring theme. I've mentioned it before, but the, you know, we've all seen it where we've been a fan of, you know, such and such a series, whether it be game, book, you know, movie, TV series, anything like, you know, comic, anything like that. We've been a fan of it, and we've thought that the themes have been obvious, and then some chuckle fuck from, you know, like Comicsgate or whatever comes along and says, you know, I liked X-Men because it wasn't political. It's about mutants who are discriminated against for being different and a purity campaign by, you know, the bad guys who, you know, want to wipe out mutants because they're different. How can you read that? How can you read it? How can you watch the cartoon series, which, you know, adapted, you know, several large story arcs from, you know, from the comics, and how can you watch the movies and not grasp it's allegorical?
Mm.
And the answer is there are a lot of people who manage that somehow.
I'm going to move us on because I think we've kind of done
probably
this.
Probably best.
Basically, politics is in all your media. Media is in all your politics.
And if you think it isn't, you've just been extraordinarily lucky to not have to think about these things.
Okay, and then we're off to just a passing commentary on the Nintendo Switch Lite being announced in the past week. I'm kind of not impressed. The price point thing wasn't an issue for me. The gameplay was, though.
Mm. Yeah, I mean... When it comes to the functionality of the Switch Lite, I don't like a lot of things about it, including the fact that you can't connect it up to the TV, that you can't actually disconnect its controllers as well, is kind of, yeah. I think you only get like an extra like half an hour to an hour battery life in it. It doesn't, kind of do anything like improve, the running of it or whatnot. So it's for people that want to, you know, get on with a Nintendo Switch but don't have a lot of money and wouldn't be playing it on a TV in the first place.
But we say not a lot of money. What's the price difference are we looking at?
Well, because just after it was launched, I did try searching for it on UK sites and I couldn't find it. But I know that the American price tag was like $100 difference or something. Something quite like, whoa.
Isn't the Switch something like $300, or is it a bit less than that in the US?
I think it was like $299, and the Switch Lite was retailing at $199.99, something like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's... put it this way, it's not something that I'm kind of eager to...
The thing is at that point, when you've just lost all that functionality that the Switch has... Well, what's the point in... Well, mind you, I suppose it's still got more functionality than, like, mobile phones of that price range that will not be fun to play games on beyond something like Candy Crush.
Well, I mean, you're going to get a Nintendo system to play Nintendo games, to be fair.
Yeah.
And even though Nintendo is slowly dipping their toes... or, you know, their IPs into the mobile market, they're not going to be anywhere near as, you know, kind of good and as sophisticated as their own.
But what I'm saying is that a Nintendo Lite will probably have, for the price, will have better functionality for gaming than a mobile phone of a comparable price or a smartphone.
If you were paying upfront for a smartphone, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people would say if, you know, something's maybe $30 that, you know, or 20 odd quid a month, it's still going to seem a little bit pricey. But if you notice, I've been staying politely quiet.
What do you think about the Nintendo Switch Lite so far, Retroid?
I think it's more to do with killing off the 3DS.
They'll finally put that nail in that coffin.
Yeah, I think they will desperately want you. You come out with a machine which is both portable and, you know, TV. They've been wanting to see if they could get what their original concept for the Wii U up and running, and they have. They definitely have. I mean, the Switch has been, you know, a real success for them. So, you know, there's no disputing that. It's, you know, it's wiped the nasty taste of the Wii U from a lot of people's mouths. So they've got the issue that they've got the, you know, the cheapy handheld console, and of course people are used to their handhelds being, you know, cheaper than the, you know, the TV machines. So they had that issue, which was, should we cut the cost of the Switch? No, it's doing well. Why would we do that? So the solution to that is to bring out a handheld which is compatible with Switch, which means they have one unified format.
Hmm.
So I think it's far more about that. And I reckon that the Switch Lite is, you know, has headroom for cost reduction.
If you
think about it, it's going to have a lot less wear and tear.
In what so respect?
Well, as you mentioned, the controllers being plugged or unplugged.
True.
So all that's integrated. It can be made cheaper. It's mass produced. I don't know if the resolution or the the quality of the screen is lower, but it certainly was on stuff like the 2DS, wasn't it?
I believe it's the same. I think it's 720 undocked.
I do know it's a smaller resolution screen.
Yeah.
But not smaller resolution, as it's physically smaller.
Yeah. In inches.
Not by much, but it is.
Hmm.
So maybe with that, they, knowing Nintendo, knowing any companies that do these things, they will have been hawking around to various companies and saying, "We're wanting to sell X number of units with it, with this thing. What can you offer us which would fit that?"
Hmm.
And of course, any company that's making screens or anything like that is going to, if you have a guaranteed sale that's going to be millions, then you can offer good rates on that, and it does mean that you've got guarantees. The Switch has been successful, so something like this would be very good for Nintendo. It would be good for the parents who we'll get Bob or Bobette a replacement handheld because the new Pokemon game is coming out. So we'll make a cheaper one. Foot in the door. So I think what's more interesting is that I was hearing more about an upgraded Switch than this, which leads me to think there's a possibility that the existing Switch will probably become the Switch Lite, and the Switch Pro that they've been that the tech press like Digital Foundry and such have been going into will probably become the new one, the new Switch.
Hmm.
So it'll be a little bit more powerful, bit more battery as well to save that power. All these things with some of the homebrew that's been coming out on the Switch has been upping the frame rate. It's been upping the clock speeds of the chipset, the NVIDIA chipset that's used in the the Switch.
Yeah,
and you've been getting a lot better performance out of it.
Mm.
So if Nintendo can say, "Here's a reason to have this," by the way, your old Switch will always be supported because we've got the Switch Lite, which is, it's pretty much going to be the same chipset. So that guarantees volume sales for that. And upgrading the Switch itself would also guarantee the volume sales for an upgraded board. So, yeah, I think it's more about Nintendo have taken one look at it and they probably thought the 3DS isn't doing as well as it used to and it was getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Hmm.
But they've thought... And of course, this has been my thought for ages. If Nintendo could have one unified format, that would say maybe it will run in a lower resolution on this version and a higher resolution on the other. Then they can save on all this development for the two platforms. They've now just got one, and they can say, well, if you buy our handheld, you can play it on the TV. If you play something on the TV, you can buy it, you can play it on the handheld as well. So I think it's a bit of a canny move, but sucks to be a 3DS owner. mind you, they've been out for years, so...
Yeah.
It's had its day.
Yeah, it has had its day, and how does 3D fit into this? It doesn't, as it turns out.
Hmm.
I do find it weird how 3D's kind of pass come and by like and pass as sort of like a gimmick. There's still a few films releasing with 3D, but it's fewer than what it was, and mostly Disney owned titles.
I still think that's because traditional cinema has shot for 2D films in the past, so all of the stuff that you know people have learned has always been to how best to you know do a spectacular view on 2D rather than you know it's like what kind of shots need to be kind of where for 3D to really you know kind of be taken advantage of.
Yeah, but most 3D has been gimmicky.
All right, I'm going to move this on. I don't want to take too long on this because I might fall asleep. Sorry, guys.
In that case, do you want to go first?
Yeah. What we've been up to. What have I been up to?
Good Doctor.
Oh, yeah. So Paul and I went through the first season of The Good Doctor, which we found is kicking about on Now TV at the moment. It's a medical series from David Shaw, the same guy that created House. Has he created House?
I know he was a big wig behind
House. Oh, he was one of the big people behind House, sorry. It's about a guy who goes into a surgeon residency at a hospital in the US. I think he's is it in Seattle?
I think so.
Side of the country. And he also happens to be on the autistic spectrum. His function levels are interesting. Like, he can do the job if it's just purely the mechanical side and the problem-solving side, because he's a savant when it comes to, like, memory and muscle memory and stuff like that. But when it comes to dealing with people, he has almost no skills really for dealing with the many, many different scenarios that dealing with people involve, from patients to his colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that he has no skills, just that all of the traits that you'd associate with an autistic person, he's got.
Yeah. It's actually an adaptation of a Korean series I've seen in the show, the opening titles and stuff. But in that, it's really compelling and stuff, quite identifiable for a lot of stuff, and it's been quite fun to watch through that. But there's something like, I think, two other series that have been released, but Sky don't have them at the moment. What else? Oh, I played through 7 out of 8 stories on Dream Daddy on the Nintendo Switch. It has fulfilled all of my expectations of what Dream Daddy would be like as a dating simulator.
So what is the point of Dream Daddy?
You are a single dad who has just moved into a neighborhood on the other side of town, and there are a lot of other eligible bachelors living in the cul-de-sac that you've just moved to with your daughter. And you're kind of navigating, having just moved with your daughter who's just finishing up her final year of high school and getting ready for college and all the drama of that, along with actually being like, maybe I should make new friends. And when we say friends, we mean friends and we mean friends.
Oh, yeah.
It's not explicit in any way. There is innuendo tucked in here and there. But I could have completed, like, haven't done, like, one story already that's, like, outstanding, but I haven't wanted to do the last story purely because it does involve trying to romancing a guy who is in a married heterosexual relationship. And I actually feel uncomfortable with trying to do that. Everyone else is single. That's fine. This gentleman is not. And it's just like, and having looked around online and stuff, like, I don't think you can get with him anyway. Like, you just end up being friends. But it gets really close. And it's just like, I'm not sure if I'd want to be that sleazeball. You know? It's just not my way of doing things.
You could almost say that's the politics of making your decision.
So I don't know if I'm ever going to actually 100% the game because of the fear of doing that. It's like, everyone else I've managed to have a successful relationship
I suppose it depends on whether you're interested in kind of completing the game fully or whether you're basically less mechanical about it.
Maybe.
You know.
I've played Dream Daddy. Those who follow my Instagram and Twitter may have seen that I'm still reading one of the longest Supernatural fanfic series for the Destiel ship ever. It's called Down to Agincourt. It's just... do you remember the end verse? The alternative future in season 5? Like Dean gets taken to the future and it's all shit.
No.
With the running people who are like zombies, but not more like more like what's it? 28. Is it more like a bit more like 28 Days Later sort of thing? Who've got the Croatoan virus, which is first introduced in season 2. Basically, like, there's the whole, like, Dean gets sent to the future and he meets Dean of the future and Castiel of the future and Chuck of the future. And everyone else is dead. And in the case of Sam, he's Lucifer's skin suit. So...
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... So this entire fanfic is set in that interpretation of Supernatural to an extent, but the Dean we're following is actually from the end of season 6 of Supernatural? Or end of season 7, one or t'other? I think it might be season 6.
Remind us again what season we're on now.
We've just finished 14, 15 is starting to film.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, it's a really...
So about a decade ago, yeah, for the series.
It's a really long fanfic, though. Like, with, like, some... It's, like, 5 parts, and some of the parts... Most of the parts are more than 300,000 words. So they're long... So the whole thing altogether is... I went and did a word count check, because one of the longest books I read on my degree was Dombey and Son by Charles Dickens. And that was about 300 and, I don't know, maybe, like, 30,000 words. And, like, several volumes of this fanfic are that long. So it's over, like, the entire fanfic, I think, is maybe over 1 million words.
Wow.
Over several parts. But it's really well written and has some really great character study stuff going on. So it's just like, and it's also the slowest of slow burns. Like I said, it's Destiel, but, like, slowest of slow burns. Like, you do not go into this series expecting sexy shenanigans anytime soon. So, yes. Yeah, so
slow burn shenanigans. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and going back to our earlier conversation about games being political, Paul managed to pick up Sniper Elite 2 cheap on the Switch, and I was shooting Nazis earlier.
Hooray!
So there you go.
Everyone should shoot Nazis. In games.
But, yeah, I mean, this is like you can snipe them and see the bullet in slow motion going through their organs or their brain or their testicles.
So much fun.
It is. It's good, wholesome fun.
Yep.
But not political in the least.
No, I can't see any politics there.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think Rebellion are the kind of company that would say that their game's not political for something like that.
Shoot the Nazis in the balls.
I mean, considering that Rebellion are now the ones that own, like, 2000 AD and stuff like Judge Dredd, it's like...
Oh, I am waiting. There's a countdown clock. I'm waiting for someone to say Judge Dredd is not political.
Okay.
Which, because I can just laugh in their face for about 15 years.
Paul, what have you been up to?
I have been playing Mario Maker 2 quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yep. So
is that on your Switch Lite?
It's on my Switch. Because last time I said about playing it,
you hadn't done the online.
No, I hadn't. I'd basically just literally done the story. So I kind of played some. The previous game had what was known as 100 Mario Challenge, where you have 100 lives and you have to basically go through as many. Or no, is it 100 lives? Yeah, 100 lives and about, I don't know, a certain amount of levels. And obviously these levels are, you know, the user-generated ones, yeah. Created ones. This one has something slightly different, where you have a smaller amount of lives, but it's kind of endless, so there's no set amount of levels, and you basically just keep on going and going and going. And, I sat down one day and was just like on easy mode, kind of going through, just seeing how many. What
I want is what you think of the verses.
I'm getting to that.
But I want the verses.
Fine, the verses. Okay, so I've been playing the verses mode quite a bit. Apart from the fact that some games are laggier than others, like some games they're just like. In terms of movement,
Can't tell why that is.
Yeah, it's obviously one of the people that is connected to the game, and I'm always kind of worried that I'm that one. But then other games run absolutely, you know, silky smooth. So it's like, okay, I don't think I am the one.
So you're not Neo.
I am not Neo. No.
Okay.
So the basic premise of the versus mode is that you have four people. Online, playing the same level, starting from, you know, the beginning point. On your marks, get set, go, race to the finish. And it can get incredibly cutthroat. Like, to the extent where, say, what?
I just remembered that video you shared.
Oh, is that the one of me waiting to have this, the piranha? There's basically an enemy on there, which is kind of this piranha plant that kind of just keeps on going around in, whatever direction that it's going. And then it will slowly kind of come back and it can kind of fill up seemingly half the screen with it. And as I was waiting with two other characters as well for this, one to kind of go down so that I can continue on, all of a sudden, Toadette picks me up and chucks me at the plant.
Killing you.
Then Toadette picks up Luigi and chucks him at the plant. We both die. She's like, oh, well, and then carries on.
Vicious.
Absolutely vicious.
See, just to see if they could. And it turns out, yes, they could.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that they knew that they could. So you also get like power-ups, obviously, you know, the usual kind of standard fare. When your character hits the question mark block, it produces a power-up. Obviously, once you die, you go back to the beginning of the level or to the last checkpoint they've reached. And you can usually kind of get the power up again. So it's not like once it's been kind of taken once, that's it. So you can end up bumping the question mark block, getting, I don't know, maybe Mushroom or Firefly or whatever. If somebody else steals that from you, so you've just boop, they've stolen it, you can't actually get another one now.
This is cruel.
This is very cruel. There was one point, however, because you can actually set in Mario Maker 2 levels that you create, you can actually set conditions to reach the goal. So, say, for example, you have to be a Cat Suit Mario, for example, or you have to, you know, reach it after collecting a certain amount of coins or, you know, after defeating a certain enemy and whatnot. And once you've achieved that goal, or the last person to achieve that goal, they have this marker on them, so everybody else could be waiting at the finish line and nothing will happen because the guy with the marker who did the last thing that was required to, you know, activate the thing hasn't reached the goal yet. What you can do, however, and what I did do, is bashed into the guy that had that marker, and that marker transferred to me. So I bashed into him, and then I ran to the end point. I literally stole it.
Oh my God.
See, you become part of the problem.
It is just absolutely brilliant. It's just a pity that it wasn't more stable. I mean, I'm expecting, you know, updates because that, I think they've already announced, because one of the problems with Mario Maker is that you're constantly kind of pitted up with people that you don't know.
Mm.
So, you know, there's no option to basically kind of play with friends at the moment unless you've kind of set up on, you know, local area network, in essence, or, you know, Wi-Fi. So you can't play with friends over the internet yet, but they are updating that.
Okay.
They've already announced that. Okay. So,
anything else you've been up to other than watching The Good Doctor with me?
Watching The Good Doctor. I did binge watch season 4 of Yumi Hair, which is, I've said about it before, but it's a series that revolves basically around a triad. That is a triad of, like, obviously three people in a relationship, not mm-hmm. like triad as in the mob bosses.
Okay.
Or not. And yeah, it's kind of, I was going to say generic drama, but it's obviously not necessarily generic. It's still drama filled there. And it is quite good, quite thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I think, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else.
Okay.
Oh, the one thing that we forgot to say.
What?
You had your movie marathon.
Oh, yeah, so I had an action movie marathon for my birthday. After getting a bunch of people to who were attending to vote on films that a bunch of lovely people from Twitter had suggested to me. So there was 15 films to vote on, and we managed, and we made a scheduled list of 6, managed to watch 5 of those. So the list was Die Hard.
Ooh, you had Terminator 2 first.
Sorry. So Terminator 2, Judgment Day Skynet Edition, Die Hard,
yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade,
Woo.
Commando, and then he was number 5. Don't fail me now, memory. 5.
Blade.
Blade, yes, Blade. We did have the original RoboCop, but people were a little bit dead by about 11 in the evening. So we kind of called it a night.
It's an easy watch because there's no politics. It's been years since I've seen Commando.
But you know what? I'd buy that for a dollar.
Would.
Oh, Emily just did the eyebrows move. Oh, dear.
Retro, what have you been up to?
I have mostly been, well, stalking on eBay. But mostly, we have been watching Dark on Netflix.
What is
Do
it?
Have you seen it? Have you seen any of it?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a German series with a Netflix original, apparently. It's a small German town with odd things going on, or unexplained things going on. It starts off with a apparently happily, you know, married father writing a suicide note and then hanging himself. And it goes from there. I'm trying to work out how much I should say because we've been boxed. There's now 2 seasons of it. There are all kinds of unexplained people popping up. And yeah, I think, you know, slight spoiler because it does give it away in the trailer. It's the whole town and everyone in it is basically a giant time paradox.
Oh, okay.
Where there's a mysterious cave.
SGD.
And as to give one example of something that's going on, you have two main families, the Nielsens and the I can't remember what the other family is, but one family is the one where the father kills himself, and they're having to deal months later, and the son Jonas hasn't had a good time of it, as you wouldn't if you're something like that has happened. And there have been mysterious disappearances, as it turns out, every 33 years in this small town. The other father, the father in the other in a family, had his brother disappear 33 years previously. And nobody, nothing's been found. And early on in the series, they suddenly find, after a boy has gone missing, and of course the police are looking for this new boy, and there's a few people wandering around saying it's happening again. And the police finally find a body in the woods, and he's dressed in, he's got like 80s trainers, he's got a Walkman. And it turns out that it's Mads, his brother, who disappeared 33 years ago. And of course, he's dead, but he's exactly as he would have been when he disappeared all that time ago. So how on earth has that happened? And then, as the family is trying to deal with that, and of course, the father is, I've lost my friend, and now my brother has turned up, but it can't be him because he looks just as he would. Then his son disappears into the cave. His son Mikkel, and Mikkel finds himself in 1986. And of course, he's wandering around saying, "I just want to find my family." There's people living in the house, but he doesn't recognize them as his family. So they're all get lost. Is this a joke? So the police pick him up, and he's saying, "I'm from the future," and you're okay. We've got someone who's he's ran away from something terrible. So we'll treat him as if he's in trauma. So he gets adopted, and this boy, Mikkel, turns out to be Michael, the father who we see in the first episode killing himself. And the whole issue is that it starts off with Jonas, Michael slash Mikkel's son, in present day, trying to work out what the hell is going on, and he finds out some of these things. They uncover that there is time travel going on, and of course none of them actually believe it until they see proof. But he's faced with the prospect of, well, he wants this this boy Mikkel to return to present day, because then his girlfriend, who is Mikkel's older sister, would be a lot better off. But then, of course, he finds out that his girlfriend, or his would-be girlfriend, he's actually his aunt. Because she's, Mikkel's older sister. And, of course, Mikkel went back in time, and Mikkel took the name Michael, and he's Jonas's father. So it turns out that they're related. And, of course, he can't bring Mikkel back to return things to how they were, because if he brought Mikkel back, then his father wouldn't exist. In that time, and neither would he. And it, just to give, that's kind of, one part of it I'm going to leave the rest of it, you know, well alone, but there's all kinds of things going on. And the whole time travel thing, you know, becomes known by about the end of, you know, the first season. And it becomes increasingly, there's a cult based on basically probability, and there's all kinds of time paradoxes and sci-fi things coming in. Like the whole thing of there's a time travel machine, but who invented it?
Hmm.
Because the bloke who invented it was showing the completed version.
Yeah.
So did he invent it? Because that the machine he was showing was a machine that he built and designed, but he's only built and designed it because he's been showing it.
Hmm.
So that, you know, there's all kinds of things, you know, going on, and it's just, this is a really interesting little series, you know, with some nice ideas. Because if you think about it, the whole idea of fate is quite entwined with, you know, religion.
Yeah,
and if you find yourself in a time paradox where things have to happen in a certain way for them to exist in the first place, then where's the line between, you know, you're just trying to work out that, you know, the sequence of events which will cause things to happen in your future and past, because they almost become interchangeable by that point. So where, you know, where does the science stop, and where does, you know, a culty type religion of destiny begin? And there's the issues of you don't know, or it's, you know, revealed later on, who knows what, who knew it when, and sometimes they knew something in the past because they are told about it in the future. It's good.
Okay.
And we're watching it in German.
Nice.
So it's kind of cool. It's very cool that, you know, there are these series which otherwise, you know, yes, Germany's got a population of about 80 million, or, you know, it's something like that. You know, it's higher than, you know, the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. A company like Netflix comes along, and of course it's available dubbed, but I have standards. So you get, you know, the issue where a series like that wouldn't necessarily be, you know, that successful or even looked at, because it might be, you know, too expensive, because it, you know, it does have effects in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a past, present and future going on. So it's people trying to keep track of it. And if it was a week to week, then that might have been more of an issue. But because it's Netflix, as soon as the season lands, you've got the full thing that you can just sit and watch. And it's a worldwide audience. So that, again, I really like the idea of a streaming company coming along and saying, hey, what do you fancy making? Is it weird? Because we'll fund it for a few series and we'll see how it goes. And if it's successful, then we'll keep doing it. But yeah, it's a pleasingly strange sci-fi series, and I would like to see more of it, you know, that kind of thing. And there's there's a French weird-looking series as well that's caught my attention on Netflix, which we'll be watching next.
Okay.
We've only got one episode left of Dark to watch, and I presume it's not going to wrap up. So we'll have to wait for the third season.
Okay.
Bastards. Make all the seasons at once. If you need to, travel back into the past so you've got more time to make them. So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right, so are we ready to... Okay, so that is all we have got time for in this episode.
In the past, present, and future.
Yep. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerds Podcast. And we're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. You can listen to this episode via Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or whatever it is. Spotify, a couple other places kicking about. And that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Is that not political in the least?
Yeah.
Remember doing the time warp.